vuoi.
Would you guys like anything before we start? Like juice, water? Oh yes, it's right there. You know what? I never named them.
Are you there?
It's a goldfish. One is a koi, and you can tell by the...
Do you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
You can hear her?
No, right now.
Okay. Very good. I think we're connected. We know what we're doing.
Well, maybe.
Maybe. Okay. Aleph Bechimel Yutat Tzadik Ayin Bet Kufra Shayin Sintet Nun Nun Gimel Dalet Yutkav Shem Tet Tetresh Tzadik Tav Gimel Tet Kuf Bet Tet Nun Ayin Yud Gimel Lamed Pei Zayin Kuf Shin Kuf Lav Tzadik Yutav Kuf Shem Kufot Tolei. Now I will be reading from the Zohar. And again, this is the easiest way to describe it is to talk about metaphysical energy. That's why I utilize it. Sometimes it makes sense to people, sometimes it doesn't. We will be talking about it in detail in the third class. So this week and next week, just please go along with it. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Yavarech et Yosef et Daika, Yavarech le'at hayama, Raza divrit denatar Yosef, Ukif ikre tzadik et Yosef, Raza divri, Zekaima vachade Yosef. Rabbi Elazar said, and he blessed et Yosef. Et is precise, alluding to Malchut, for he blessed the sign of the covenant, namely the secret of the covenant that Yosef kept, which is Malchut. For this reason, the righteous Yosef is called Et, as it is written, Et Yosef, since Yosef includes the secret of the covenant, Malchut that is present with him. The word covenant is the circumcision. And in the Bible, and all of Kabbalah comes and utilizes the coded messages in the Bible. In the Bible, there are certain words, and in Hebrew grammar, there's a word called et, which is spelled the first letter, aleph, and the last letter, ha. So these two letters are pronounced et, and they have no meaning. They have no meaning in Hebrew, they have no meaning in English, they cannot be translated. It's a grammatical tool on one level. It's a grammatical tool that tells you that this noun that it's attached to is a direct object and not the subject of the sentence. But on a spiritual level, it's telling you which spira, which metaphysical consciousness that you're dealing with and talking about. So everything in the Torah, in the Bible, is coded. Understanding that code is what Kabbalah is about. And truly, that code is the blueprint of creation. Now, we start with one basic rule in the class. My name is Hanoch, and that's not the rule. Rule is, do not believe a word I say. And the reason for that is, I'm not here to prove anything to anybody. I'm here to explain, I'm here to give you tools, to give you information which you can use as tools in your life today, right now. Those tools will help you prove to yourself the truth of what I say. Not up to me to prove it to you. And here's the basic understanding. If I drop this, will it fall to the floor? Your shirt.
Drop it right now.
Drop it right now, it will fall to the floor. You're absolutely sure. You believe it will drop to the floor, you know it will drop to the floor. Both. Can't be both. If you believe something, you're already implying there's an element of doubt. You're not sure 100%. But if you know it's going to drop to the floor, you're 100% certain. Is it going to drop to the floor?
No.
Not necessarily. Why not? I could pick it up. I could use my other hand to catch it. I could summon an angel to take it out of the air. I could summon another angel to throw it against the wall. All of those are possible. Well, what's your knowledge? Will it fall to the floor? What do you know? What do you expect to happen? You expect it to fall to the floor, correct? What is that expectation based on? Past experience. Knowledge is experience. I'm going to give you information. It's up to you if you want to make that knowledge. And the way you make things knowledge is to utilize them in your life. This is not a class that's academic. It's a class that's experiential. Any questions before we start? Donna, if you want to ask questions, you or Stuart, you can press star 6. Okay. Where do I start? Does anybody have any questions about what Kabbalah is? Any other questions on any level? Yes?
There's a concept where it's recommended that only study Kabbalah, the right person.
Okay. Okay. Sure. The question is that the gentleman has heard a statement that it's only good to study Kabbalah from the right person, the right institution, the right place. So let's start with what I will answer your question in the process. Kabbalah means to receive. The question is, what are you receiving? There is an assumption in Kabbalah that cannot be proved. It can be proved individually through your own intuitive level, your own intuitive self, that what I'm saying is true. But it cannot be proved scientifically. It cannot even be proven from one person to another. It's proven by yourself knowing that it's right, that it's true. The assumption is that the Creator created the universes for a reason, and that reason has nothing to do with pain and suffering and chaos. That reason is only goodness. The Creator wants to share goodness with its creations. We are its creations. Every atom is its creation. Every animal, every plant, every planet, star in the heavens is its creation. The Creator wants to create, wants to share goodness with its creations. That's an assumption I cannot prove to you, but it is true. So we look around the world and we see a lot of chaos. That's not from the Creator. That's from us not knowing how to receive what the Creator wants to share with us. Kabbalah is a system to receive that goodness. It's a system to eliminate chaos from your life and to receive goodness. With that in mind, I'm going to make a statement that this world is an illusion. Everything about it is an illusion. Our senses were designed for us to perceive the illusion, not the truth. What do I mean by that? We have the sense of vision. Our eyes see upside down. The light at the top of an object goes into the bottom of the eye. The light at the bottom of an object goes into the top of the eye. The retina sends that message to the brain, and the brain interprets it. Every step in that process is an opportunity for chaos, an opportunity for mistakes, an opportunity for some essence or entity to interpret it differently, to make you make a mistake. So if you see somebody standing upside down, you're going to senses, every one of our senses, all have this type of aspect that will make us see the world differently than it truly is. That's an illusion. Another definition of illusion is anything that changes. I woke up this morning, I was absolutely tired. An hour later, I was invigorated. What happened? 2 days ago, I woke up absolutely invigorated, really excited. An hour later, I was devastated. What happened? I heard about something, I saw something, I was impacted by something, and my feelings changed. Feelings are illusion. They change. The only thing that is truth is unchanging. The Creator is unchanging. It says in the Bible, I do not think like you, and I never change. The Creator does not change. We change. The reason we change is we perceive differently from one moment to the next. Part of the illusion. Part of the system of illusion. Now, there's a reason why the world is like this. We will discuss next week what that system is and why it was created. We will answer the age-old question, why did God create the world? But let's step back a second and say, without putting anybody on the spot, do you have to believe in God to study Kabbalah? And the answer is, not only do you not have to believe in it, you cannot believe in it. You will be given tools, and they will work. Whether you believe in them, you believe in God, you believe the sun will rise tomorrow or the moon will set, what doesn't matter, the system that we will explain to you will work in your life. That's up to you, whether you use it. It's not about belief, and it is about knowledge, but that knowledge is your intuitive level. Now, for the last 400 to 500 years, Western society has taught the Descartes system, which is, prove it to me. Show it to me. Let me see it and see it for myself. And we're going to take that system to its ultimate level. You're going to see it for yourself. I'm going to ask you to do some things that don't make logical sense. They will not hurt you. Sometimes you will feel foolish doing them. But at the end of 3 to 6 months, you will look back and say, I'm a different person, and this works. My life has less chaos than it did before. Or you'll look back in 3 to 6 months and say, this guy is absolutely insane. Let me out of this place. That's all I ask for you, not from you. It's all I ask for you. Because I know the system works, and it works for every human being. It's up to that human being to determine whether it works for themselves. Now, the people who were here last night, and by the way, you don't need to be here both nights. Each week, I set the classes up so that more people could attend, because not everybody can come Sunday, not everybody can come Monday. So it's set up that you can work that out. I'm going to pass out a paper. Please put it upside down. Those who were here last night have already experienced it, so please don't give away the secrets. Please turn the paper over and count the letters, the number of letter S. S. And I will tell you that if English is not your first language, you will have a better chance of getting all not have English as your first language, or do you? Combination, but basically it's what was spoken at home was not English. So that's considered not your first language. And the reason for it is most people who are taught English with their first language, they pronounce the letter F in the word of like a V sound. We say of, we don't say of, off. We don't say the harsh F, it's a soft V. And because of that, if you hand this test to people like last night, they miscount it because they don't read the OF as an F. They read it as something else. And the reason that happens is called ego. I know better. I don't have to count the letters. I know. Let's just skip over this. You did it yourself. If you're honest with yourself as you're going through this, you were saying to yourself, in some level, what am I doing this for? This is silly. This is human nature. Human nature is what the world, everybody has. And we all use it as an excuse. I'm not perfect, I'm human. Truth is, the Creator is perfect, whatever perfect means. If the Creator is perfect, why is His creation imperfect? And the answer is, His creation is perfect. We are perfect. That's a look around the world. Does it seem perfect? It is perfect. Why do we perceive it as not perfect? Because of our ego. Because we are still children. Even if we're adults, we are still children in the process of learning. Perfection only comes when you're an adult, when you have life experience. Now, life experience doesn't mean becoming an adult in a lifetime. There are people who are 100 years old that act like they're 3. And there are people who are 10 who act like they're 1,000. What is perfection? Perfection is the completion of the process. If something still needs to be done, then the process isn't complete. Yes? What's the origin of the ego? It's such a deep question that it's I got to step back to give you an answer that you're able to handle. The origin of the ego is that is the Creator who created an energy intelligence, and He gave it a job. Give people free will. That's your job. Make it look like you and I are equal so that they can choose to be bad. They can choose to do inappropriate things. They can choose to destroy the world. They can create atoms, nuclear power, and have a war. That's their free choice. That's the purpose of the ego. That's who created the ego. Perfection comes when we choose to do good. Now, why do we choose to do good? Because the Creator is good. Why do we choose to do, and I don't like to use the word bad because there is nothing bad, but let's use it for this discussion at this stage in our development. One second. Why do we choose to do bad? Because there's a force within us that says, if someone tells me to do something, I don't want to. That's human nature. In fact, we teach that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the forefathers, kept every one of the mitzvot. They did everything that we are supposed to do. But we get more merit when we do it than they did. Now, clearly, they're superior to us spiritually. So why do we get more merit? Because nobody ever said to them, you have to do it. But we're not told you have to do it. We're told we recommend you should do this. And the fact that somebody said to us, do it, makes us bristle, makes us say no, makes us want to run and do the opposite. That's free choice. That's the purpose of the ego. You have a question?
Well, how much influence or angels do we have any?
We create angels every time we do an action. We create millions of angels. The angels we create may not be complete. So we have to correct that so that those angels become complete. So if you do an action as a robot, what's the habit you have? Pick any habit. Drinking coffee. Okay. Do you become conscious that you're drinking coffee? It's rote behavior. That action creates an angel who doesn't have a mind. It's rote behavior. It's robotic. But the angel is created by the action. We say a sentence. We start the sentence with the word "the." The rest of the sentence flows robotically. I have no idea what I'm going to say. That each one of those words is an angel. Each one of those words has power. Each one of those words will affect the world. Do we see them affect the world? Last night I told you the story, so I'll tell it again. There was a story of these two sages about 200 years ago. One was named the Chafetz Chaim, and the other one, I don't remember his name. But they were having dinner at an inn restaurant. And the hostess came over and asked how the meal was. And the Chafetz Chaim said, the meal was great. His companion said, the meal was great. It was a little salty. The hostess left, walked into the kitchen, and the Chafetz Chaim said, how could you do that? How could you say this? You just killed somebody. What are you talking about? How can I kill somebody by saying it's salty? I'm telling the truth. Come with me. And the Chafetz Chaim and his friend went into the kitchen, and they observed the hostess, who was the owner of the inn, is berating the cook. How could you make these special, these are very high men. You know, how can you give them a meal that's salty? You know, you're fired. Get out of here. You're ruining my business. This is what these two men observed. And the man realized. He caused this cook to lose his job or her job. The family that depends on that income is now destitute. This winter, and this was in Poland, and actually in Russia, in that winter, they would die without the income just to buy coal or wood for the fires. Our words have power. We just don't see the effects. It's part of the illusion. Part of the ego that says, that's a pretty dress to somebody. When you're really thinking, I want that dress. I want them to think that I like the dress when I really don't. All these different attitudes. Each one of those words is an angel. Sometimes the angel has a mind. Sometimes the angel has a body. Sometimes the angel has both. It depends on what we are doing and what our consciousness is at any given moment when we say it. Any other questions? same thing all over. Please turn it over and start counting Fs again. And while you're counting, I'm going to talk a little bit about the history of Kabbalah. The history of Kabbalah started with the moment of creation. The moment of creation took place before the Bible story of Adam and Eve and the Garden of Eden. Creation started with a thought. Somebody had thought to build a building. Somebody has a thought to build a 26-floor building, and somebody else has a thought to build an 84-story building, and somebody has a thought to buy the property that that building is going to go on. And all of it gets sorted out, and there's going to be an 84-story building built. What's the first thing they do? They actually do three things, but one thing is they go arrange the financing from the bank. Another thing they do is go to an architect to draw the plans. The Creator did not create this world out of happenstance. There is a thought behind the creation. There is a thought called the thought of creation. I said it earlier, the thought of creation is to share goodness with the creations. That's its purpose. We are here in this world to learn how to receive that goodness. And we'll talk next week why this world was necessary. Because initially it wasn't. But we changed. We'll talk about that next week. But that moment of creation has gone forward step by step, to its ultimate completion. What is the ultimate completion? If you have a child, what is the thing you want most for your child? You want them to be happy, successful, have children of their own. You want grandchildren. Whatever human beings have wanted for 5,000, 10,000, 15 million years. The highest thing that a parent ever wants for their child is to be like them. I'm not talking about that I'm a carpenter, I want my son to be a carpenter. But I'm talking what I want for my son. What I want for my daughter is fulfillment. Whatever their desire is, they should be fulfilled, they should be happy, they should be joyful. They should have the ability to function in their society. That's my purpose as a father for my children. The Creator acts like a father at times with us. He is saying, I want to share my essence with my creation. That's the highest level. Therefore, the purpose of creation is to become God, to become the Creator. And this world is a place where we can be co-creators. Because ultimately, we can never be God. But we can come close. What does it mean to come close to being God? A 2-year-old gets a bottle of milk. Who gives him the bottle of milk?
Mother.
God. Through the hands of the mother, or the father in some parts of our society these days. But ultimately, that milk is coming from God. Through the hands of the mother. And relative to the child sees the mother as God. It, and this is a way of perceiving the Creator. Being close to the Creator means to act like the Creator acts. Through the Bible stories, we see, we've been told how the Creator acts. We've been told He doesn't think like us. But we've also been told that He visits the sick. He came to Abraham after his circumcision on the third day. On the third day is the most painful part of the circumcision. Most people don't know that. I don't remember mine, so it's clearly I don't know that. But I was told by people who are supposed to know the third day is the most painful part of the circumcision. Third day is when God came to visit Abraham. And He sent three angels to visit him. Why? Because He wanted him to be in bed rest, but Abraham wanted to help somebody. He wanted to share with somebody. Because that was the nature of Abraham. Abraham had a tent with doors on all four sides so people didn't have to walk the extra 50 steps or 10 steps, however wide it was. So Abraham wanted somebody to share with so he could be like God. So God sent him three angels on their way to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. We are told throughout the stories in the Bible, which is the blueprint of creation. It is the blueprint that that 84-story building has to have before anybody starts putting it up. We've been told with these stories, what is the nature of God? Sometimes God's nature is limiting. He created the universe, and then He said Shaddai, which means enough. Stop expanding. Hasn't reached that point, as our scientists have told us. But it will reach a point where it stops expanding and it starts to collapse. Why? Because that's part of the plan of creation. Sometimes He acts as a judge. The name Elohim was written 32 times in the story of the first 7 days. Teaching us the nature of God as a judge. Sometimes He's called the Tetragrammaton, Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, which is a name dealing with mercy. Sometimes He has another name. Sometimes He has 72 different names. Essentially, God's a member of the mafia and He needs lots of aliases. But it was a joke, guys. It's not that He needs aliases. He has different attributes. And we can't know what His attributes are unless we name them. We've named them. When we name His attribute, we name Him, but only in that aspect. Because the Creator cannot be named. He can't even be described by His opposites, which is the way most things are named. The Creator is, He doesn't change. We want to be like the Creator. Why? Because we were created with that nature, to be like the Creator. It's built into us. That's called human nature. But we are to grow beyond human nature. We are to become God. We are to become higher than the angels. Yes?
The watchers who are going to be representing them, or who will have more authority upon them?
Well, you're implying that there's a limit to what God will do.
I am thinking like a human, you know.
Yeah, I know, and that's okay. But you have to step back, because what Kabbalah teaches us is to understand what is the cause. You're starting with an assumption that you're going to be like a human. God is not like a human. God said, yes, every one of us, all 6.5 billion people today, and however many have died and come again, which is the reincarnation, every one of us will be God. And every one of us will be a creator in our own way. And there is no hierarchy for this group of creators because five fingers, right? Do they work together? Close it, they become a fist, they work together. What do we call it? What's the atom in this finger? What's its name? I'm sorry? Pinky. No, that's the whole thing. The name of this atom is atom number 12,207 in Hanok's left pinky, or right pinky. I can't say which side is anymore. We have a name, but it doesn't tell me what the atom does. But that atom, when I cut my arm over here, scientifically we're taught that that atom sends blood from here over to there so it'll heal faster. How does it know that it even got it? How does it know that I'm in pain? Because it feels the pain of the organism. We don't understand cause and effect. We don't see cause and effect. As I said last night, if I take a baseball and I throw it at a window, it's going to break the window. Except, before the baseball hits the window, if I take a picture photographically, the window starts to break before the ball gets there. What's going on? There's communication between the ball and the window that says, I'm going to break you, so go ahead and break. There's communication between every atom within you and yourself. There's communication between you and every other one of the 6.5 billion people. We call that quantum consciousness of the human race. And there is nothing that is ever known or will be known or was ever known that is not included in that knowledge base. Everything that could ever be known is there. Einstein develops the theory of relativity, a major event, a great man. Did he make anything new? He revealed something that was always true. Somebody else, I forget his name, please excuse me. He showed us the periodic chart. Asked him, how did you discover this? I dreamed it. He got a message from the quantum consciousness. There's the periodic chart. He was revealed it. He was chosen to reveal it. Just like you were chosen to reveal your three children. Just like somebody else is chosen to reveal something else. Why you're chosen to reveal those children and somebody else something else? There is cause and effect at every point in the system, whether we are able to see it or not. Just because I don't know the answer does not mean that the answer isn't there. What comes first, the question or the answer? What comes first, the chicken or the egg? The answer not only wants, always existed, the answer wants to be revealed. The answer talks to me and says, ask the question so I can be revealed. Were you listening? No. But you said ask the question anyway, robotically. The answer is the cause. In our world, we think we are the cause. Great idea. Let's ask this question. Our ego. Is there anything wrong with our ego? Absolutely not. It serves a purpose. It gives us free choice. But it's not the purpose of why we're here. We're here to grow past the ego. We're here to become perfect. The ego is not perfect. The ego is the one who makes mistakes. The ego is the one who accepts in the influence of the Mercury in retrograde. Because I didn't have to accept that influence. it was my consciousness that made that happen. Now, I need to understand myself why I allowed that to happen, why I created it that way. Most of us don't bother to even ask that question, and those who do ask the question don't be bothered with it. They move past it and let's go on. We'll worry about it because the technology works most of the time. Perfection means that the technology works all the time. What are we willing to be satisfied with? The Kabbalist desires everything. Alexander the Great, what did he want? Why did he leave Macedonia? He hated his father. That's why he left. He was in love with his mother and couldn't have her, so that's why he left. This is his motivation. 22 years old, 26 years old, what did he want? He wanted the whole world. He wanted everything in it, and he wanted them all to acknowledge him as the greatest. And he succeeded. He conquered the world. Didn't complete it, so he got to come back and do it another time as another conqueror of the world, Nebuchadnezzar, and so forth. Cause and effect. What is your desire? What is your true desire? The Kabbalists teach us that every human being has one basic desire, and that's to be close to the Creator. In an individual aspect that only we can do. Only I can do. You can't do it. So why are you in my world? But of course, you could do something I can't do. So why are you letting me in your world? Yes? In a sense? The answer is yes. It is the joy. What's the fulfillment? Again, you're using a word, serve God. We haven't defined it. In Hebrew, you're going to love this. The word that we translate as serving God is avodah. It actually translates also as work. But its root, it's shorish, and in Hebrew, every word has a shorish. And words that have the same shorish have some connection that helps us learn spiritual truth. So what is this great shorish? Slave. Serving God as a slave. Do you think God wants you to be a slave?
Probably not.
Would you want a slave?
Probably not.
Don't we consider in our society that we've moved forward and given up slaves?
Is the ego the one that's telling me to be my God?
Maybe it's driving you to run away from God, to be a hedonist on some island in the south or in the Caribbean with the sun beating down and all the women around you. I don't know. There are people with those desires. There are people who have those desires that sublimate them. And we call them crazy. It's all part of the process. This world is an illusion, and I'm going to start to... Did we count the number of F's on this last page? How many? Wrong. 14. I don't... You know the answer. How come you got it wrong? You know the answer. I gave you why you... You got it right the first time, but not the second time. Thank you, Hashem. Page 14. You want me to show you what it is? There's one in Franklin. There's one in Featherstone. There is one in referred, one in father, one in of, one in refrigerated, one in freight, one in of, one in two in efforts, one in benefits, one in of, one in form, one in of. 14.
And I even told you, we counted as an OV. Everybody.
I want to tell you an interesting story. I can make this story very long, but we don't have the time. My teacher was a rabbi in a mental institution.
And he would speak with this schizophrenic
who had been there for 30 years. And my teacher, he became friendly with the schizophrenic and with the shrink. And the shrink, after 30 years working in New York, after 30 years, he's saved up enough for his wonderful vacation he's been planning for years to Acapulco. And he tells his patient of 30 years where he's going and what he's going to do and how he's planning it. He's going to have a limousine pick him up at the house, and he's going to get on the plane, and it's going to be a beautiful flight, and he's going to get in Acapulco and get the presidential suite. And everything is going to be well-planned, happy, perfect weather. So he leaves for his vacation, and his wife is late. So the limousine didn't come. They have to call a cab. They get to the airport. They miss the plane. They have to go on another plane. The weather in the flight is horrible, and she gets sick. They get to the hotel, and because they were late, they lost their room. The only thing left is the small cubby hole next to the elevator that goes up, that makes noise all night long. And they went out fishing, got sunburned, and had to stay in the room for 3 days. 2 weeks later, after everything's going wrong, I'm shortening it. I mean, it really was a horrible experience. 2 weeks later, he comes back, and he says to the patient, the schizophrenic, says, "How was your vacation?" "It's horrible. Don't ask. I don't even want to tell you it was so bad." And he proceeds to describe the litany of complaints. And the schizophrenic says, "I really don't understand. I had a wonderful vacation while you were gone. You said you were going to Acapulco, I decided to come with you. The cab picked me up right outside the hospital door. It took me to the airport where I was given red carpet treatment. I got on the plane, and what a gorgeous, what are they called? Hostesses. Stewardesses, thank you. A gorgeous stewardess, and there was a little boy next to me who was so funny. I had a great plane trip. And then we got to the hotel. The limousine from the hotel picked me up. The driver spoke English. I didn't have to worry about Spanish. I got to the hotel. They had the presidential suite at cut prices because of some upgrade that I got. And I went out fishing, and I caught this 700-pound shark. And they gave it to me because I was the 1,000th winner of the fish." On and on with this wonderful, absolutely fantastic vacation. So which of them is crazy? The one who lives in the world of illusion, or the schizophrenic who lives in the world of illusion? Which is crazy? The shrink is crazy. He's the one who went it with his wife with the litany of complaints. All he had to do was think about it and be happy.
Uh-huh.
There's a story told about a wonderful sage who lived about 200 years ago. The story is told that his grandson is playing in the room. And his grandson says, Saba, Hebrew for grandson, grandfather, I'm hungry. And the grandfather is studying. And when sages study, it's not like other people. The stories of studying, they study the Torah. A bird flies over their head, the bird burns up because of the light that they're drawing. There's a concentration level that's unique. The grandfather said, no, Kobola, you're not. You're not hungry. Go play some more. The boy goes over and he plays another 20 minutes, comes back, grandfather, I'm hungry. No, you're not. An hour later, the boy is really hungry. He's crying for food. No, you're not. The boy starts storming out of that room to get some food. The grandfather says, oh, wait a second, I'm sorry. I see that you are truly hungry. I just saw this kopeck on the table that you can go buy some ice cream with. Was the kopeck there all the time? Or the creator said, the boy's hungry. Here. What's the illusion? And what's the reality? Every human being has food in this world. Some people are starving. Why? Because they don't know how to receive from the Creator. And I don't mean to be offensive. I've seen the pictures. I have been hungry in my own life. I understand deprivation and lack. Probably not to the extent of other people. I don't mean to be offensive. But there's a reason why every person is where they are at. That doesn't mean we don't feel their pain. It doesn't mean that we don't share with them. Doesn't mean we don't try and change the world for the better. We have to see cause and effect. We have to pierce this veil of illusion to see cause and effect. And that is our role. That is what we are here to do. That is part of our growth towards perfection. I'm going to hand out somewhere. There it is. This is the last, second to the last piece of paper I will hand out. The last piece of paper will be my numbers and how to contact me. While you're reading that, I will discuss, these classes are free. We live in a society that says my bills have to be paid. So you're more than welcome to pay my bills through donations. No one is turned away for lack of donations because I have certainty the Creator will provide. Sometimes my creditors even believe me. If you want an answer, you have the wrong, or maybe the one with the dots. Did you get a page with dots? No, by the end of the class. Thank you. At the end of the class, and if you'd rather not hand it to me, you put it on the table over there. It's fine. And if you'd rather send it to me by PayPal, you can do it that way. Or if you want to mail me a check, you can do it that way. One day during the course of the class, you'll understand the consciousness that I have to have as a teacher. The dots. I can give you the answer now, or we can wait till next week. The choice is yours. Last night, they decided to wait. And they're frustrated with that answer.
Are you supposed to make prayers, or God has to?
You're supposed to use.
You want,
you're supposed to take a pen and put it on the paper, and then make four straight lines that connect all nine dots. Without lifting the pen from the paper.
Sure.
So, this is really the end of the class. We will meet next week at 7:30 at this location. Does anybody have any questions? My personal story of how I discovered Kabbalah was I was raised in a very wealthy environment, a family business that my dad died when I was 16. I went to finish college at the age of 22, and I took over the in the U.S. I'm one of the five natives of Los Angeles. There's myself, and I have two sisters, and there must be two more people who are natives of Los Angeles, but I've never met them. It's another one of my jokes. So, I was born in Los Angeles, was raised in a wealthy family at that time. My sisters, who were older than I, were raised sometimes in lack. My dad died when I was 16. My mother ran the business until I was graduated college, and then I proceeded to grow the business from 100 employees to 400. And then I proceeded to lose the business. And it was at that time that I went searching for answers. Because how could my perfect record, all this growth, go dissipate? Or as people are finding out, and I hope none of you are in this situation, of, you know, the economy went south on this country for 2 years ago, and people are unemployed and been unemployed for 2 years, still looking for work. These kinds of experiences, I went looking for something. A friend of mine said, come to the Kabbalah Center. And I said, no. You have been playing around with runes, with tarot, with astrology. You've been doing this crap for 20 years that I've known you. It's all crap. It's meaningless. I'm an engineer. I have a technical background. I don't, forget it. 6 months, he's after me to go to this place. One day I get a call. What are you doing tonight? I forgot that this is what he wanted. So I said nothing. I had no plans. Meet me on this corner. He didn't tell me what I was doing. Meet me on this corner. I got there. What am I going to do? Say no? I'm going to walk away? So I went to the introductory class. And I got hooked. I listened to somebody tell me pretty much what I told you. And at the end of that night, I was signed up for a basic class that at that time was 12 weeks long. I make it 20 weeks long, and I didn't tell you about that. This class will be 20 weeks long. At the end of those 20 weeks, you will have every tool that you can imagine and some that you can't imagine to provide two things: to remove chaos from your life and to have a personal experience of the Creator. You will have those tools. What you do with them will be up to you. Kabbalah is a lifetime study for those who choose to make it that, which is what I have chosen. You don't have to. The 20 weeks is sufficient to know everything. What you want to do with it after that is up to you. At the end of my basic class, I was taking two classes a night, four nights a week. I wanted this information. I was hungry for this information. I couldn't get it fast enough, and I still feel that way. I studied 3, 4, 5 hours a day because there's that much more to learn. But ultimately, it's what you want. What is your desire? We are each created with our own unique desire. desire. What makes me separate from you, I have a different desire than you. That's what makes us separate. That's why we perceive ourselves as separate. When the truth is, we're all part of the same vessel. We're all part of a vessel its purpose is to reveal the light, to reveal the Creator's pleasure. Who feels the pleasure? Us. Does the Creator feel pleasure? The Creator doesn't change. There's something called nachas. The Creator receives. The best way to understand it, and it's really not understandable, a grandparent sees their grandchild, the 2 or the 3-year-old, running around laughing, kibitzing, just enjoying life. He feels pleasure from seeing the child happy. That's called nachas, that pleasure, because he was part of the continuity. That's the closest the Creator feels to pleasure. The Creator doesn't feel. Feeling is an illusion. The Creator just is. And the Creator wants to be revealed. The word want doesn't apply to the Creator. Want implies a desire. The Creator has no desires. But we'll come to understand how to handle that, how to balance that, how to reconcile that. Any other questions?
Yes. Well, so what? How much is it true that God wants to worship him if he doesn't change?
Well, the word worship is what we described as avodah, service. We don't, in Judaism, it's not translated as worship. It's not translated as service, although sometimes it is. It's not translated as work, although sometimes it is. And it's not translated as slave, although sometimes it is. God has a desire for us. He created us with a desire. So therefore, he wants what we want. But that's very deep. And it's very uncomfortable for most religious people, because it goes against all of the training you've had in this world. And by the way, secularism is also a religion. Western society is taught, go after the physical comforts, go after the physical world. Make money, do your thing, do your own thing. This is called secularism. Secularism is a religion. It has its own 10 commandments. Most of them are not really pleasurable, but that's beside the point. I'm not attacking any religion. And Kabbalah is not. While its roots come from Judaism, Judaism served a purpose of bringing the knowledge across the centuries unchanged, so that today I can have that. Kabbalah is true for every human being, not just Jewish people, and that's why you don't have to be Jewish to study it. Any other questions? Yes. On the third class, I will give you a tool that will start that. But we will use the tool of the Hebrew letters. You will not have to speak Hebrew. You will not have to learn Hebrew. But you will be able to use the Hebrew letters for that purpose, because your guides speak Hebrew. Ultimately, the answer is unlimited, infinite. On a surface level, it's probably about 1,000 different attributes, from healing to irony to physical perfection, time travel, different attributes.
What about those ones who already are talking to God in a mano a mano?
Somebody who's talking to God, that's called the experience of the Creator.
So a person doesn't need Kabbalah?
He or she still needs Kabbalah, but they usually don't know it. Their ego is such. Are they sure they are speaking to God? Because the system was created by the Creator in a way that there are negative entities whose job it is to confuse you. So they are talking to something, and they are sure it's God. They are sure it's positive. The Kabbalah gives you tools to be able to test whether it's positive, for you to know for yourself. Not because you're sure, because the entity said, my name is Eliyahu Hanavi, Elijah the prophet, or the entity said, I'm the man from Nazareth, or the entity said, I'm the man people call Buddha. All of these different names, these negative entities are able to use. How do you know who you're speaking to? How do you know who you're communicating with? They have a purpose, which is to confuse you. You have to make sure that you're using the right symbols and the right mechanism. And the mechanism is used by both systems, the positive and the negative. So somebody who's speaking to God, Baruch Hashem, I hope they are. Kabbalah will give you a tool to test it.
There's a person like Jesus, right, who was tempted by a negative identity.
Uh-huh.
And he refuses to test his God. So you should know, test your father or God. Is that a message there? Is that a symbolism or a creed? Or
have you had tests in your life?
That.
You described a serious. You described an incident in your life. You had a test.
Yeah.
When you were 9 years old, you said there was an incident with this other boy.
Yeah,
right. That's a test. It was painful. It was difficult. It's a test. If God tests you, how come you can't test God?
I don't know.
Any other questions? The simple answer is there's 24 books in the Torah, of which 19 of them are books of prophets. God says in the Bible, I will put words in the mouths of prophets. In the days of the temple, this is not well known, but it is true. In the days of the temple, there were schools of prophets. You were taught how to be a prophet. That's part of what I will teach you. It's part of the tools, how to be a prophet. We live in a time where prophecy is no longer available to us. It will return, and we need to prepare for it. But yes, we will discuss prophecies, but understand what are those prophecies? What are their purpose? Because I will tell you very simply what I will teach you next week. You want to know the prophecy? We are all going to return to an endless, idyllic existence called heaven, called something other than heaven. We are going to return to the endless, unlimited world of total bliss and fulfillment. That's the prophecy. Why do you need to know what tomorrow is when 1,000 years from now you're going to be there? When 200 years from now you're going to be there? Why do you need to know what tomorrow is going to be? But the prophets have come and they have given us prophecies about what will happen. They've given it in a coded way because they didn't see it clearly.
The only prophet who saw clearly was Moses, and he's the one who wrote the Bible. He's the one who was dictated the Bible. The Creator dictated it to him. Whatever that means in the context of the Creator. Does God have a mouth to dictate? You know, we don't understand these things. We will use vocabulary that's very clear. The Hebrew language, when used properly, is extremely clear.
There are
no synonyms. No two words mean the same thing. Yes.
In my dreams, I see the future, and then I see it happening, and there's nothing that I can do.
Well, that's not true.
What's the whole idea of knowing the future?
The truth is that if you see the future, and dreams are a 1/60th of prophecy, if you see the future, you can change it. Again, that's a scientific explanation. We will discuss it in the next few weeks. The vocabulary that you use impacts your consciousness, and that's why I'm hesitant to say yes. Any other questions? Donna, do you have any questions? Shalom.